Blog Talk Radio.
On this program, another glittering lineup of stars from the glamour in which they live. You're about to have an intimate look at these and other well-known celebrities in their glamorous world called Hollywood.
Indeed, it's going to be another glamorous day here on the Amy Beth Arkowi Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from New York, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. So we're going to do the Emmy thing today. Indeed, we are. Hope you had a great weekend, a little autumnal feel here in the Northeast to get you going. Officially, fall has started. Had a wonderful weekend, meeting, greeting, reading for folks at a Quick Reads event. I knew you were out there. I met the fan. Yeah. Selling and signing books. Rosetta Stone sold separately. Those who have seen my signature know what I'm talking about. So let's talk Emmys. I'll tell you, if you had an Emmy office pool going, I don't think you did too well, because I know I'm usually great at predicting these things. There were lots of upsets last night, indeed. Hey, you want to get into the mix here? The Twitter feed already going crazy over the costumes, or the gowns, I guess we should call them. At Amy Writes, you can tweet me, call me at 347-857-4505, and let's bring in one of the experts. Kristen Burt is a Hollywood insider. She is a correspondent for iVillage and the host of the recap shows for I Think You Can Dance, So You Think You Can Dance, and Dancing with the Stars, which turned out to be a winner last night at the AfterBuzz Network. So she knows what she's talking about, and she's been up all night. But you don't have to wear a gown on the radio, at least, Kristen. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm happily, like, in sweats. I'm very comfortable right now.
That's good. That's good. So at least you're up all night, but at least you can be comfy, unlike the TV correspondents who are still all dolled up after a night. I feel for those gals. I really do.
I know.
This was a big night of upsets, wasn't it? I mean, it was an upset from the beginning, and there were a lot of upsets. I mean, I think the first award was an upset and probably the best speech of the night from Merritt Weaver, who was won for Best Supporting Actress, clearly not ready for it, for Nurse Jackie. And I was watching the show with my mom, actually, and we said, oh, Merritt Weaver, oh, she's great in Nurse Jackie. And my mom said, yeah, she's not going to win. They announced she won. So that was the beginning of the upsets. Could you, I mean, really, you couldn't do the over-under on this, right, with these people, with
you,
all
you
the upsets?
Yeah, you definitely couldn't. It was one of those things that started the ball rolling, and I thought, wow, are we in for a whole evening of this? And I think what the thing is that we've seen Modern Family dominate some of the comedy categories for so long that
sure,
that's what you just figure. It's one of the cast members of Modern Family. Well, it wasn't. And it kind of looks like their era of, like, dominating the acting categories, I think that's over.
Well, the problem with the thing about Modern Family, it's interesting that they have won in the acting categories because there's so many of them nominated, you think they may, like, bump each other off, which may, in fact, have happened this time. But it's nice to see it when there's an upset. And Jeff Daniels, who the heck thought he was going to win for Newsroom? I really thought Kevin Spacey had it because he was so great in House of Cards. And, of course, the sentimental favorite was probably Bryan Cranston because it was the swan song for Breaking Bad. And here comes Jeff Daniels from Newsroom. So who saw that one coming?
Nobody. I don't think anyone saw that coming, including Jeff Daniels himself. He got up there and he said, well, crap.
Yeah.
I mean, he really felt
yeah,
that moment. It was great. But I think that the interesting thing is that it was such a strong category. A lot of people thought Kevin Spacey was going to take it. Breaking Bad is on a high. So, you know, Bryan Cranston easily could have taken it. And there's also Jon Hamm, who has done some excellent work all the way through Mad Men and has never won.
I know Jon Hamm had a great season. Mad Men, it's interesting because that show, which doesn't seem like it's dominating as much as it did, it had the juggernaut of winning the most Emmys in a row, tied with for Best Drama for West Wing, but never won an acting category. And this year we thought maybe, I didn't think Jon Hamm was going to get it just because of the whole Kevin Spacey, Bryan Cranston thing, but again, Jeff Daniels won. But I thought maybe Elizabeth Moss would win. She was actually was 0 for 2 because she was nominated for Mad Men and also for Top of the Lake, which that was another surprise, went to Laura Linney for The C Word, A Hereafter, which I never saw that one coming either.
And the best part of that was she wasn't there in attendance, and Matt Damon said, she's such a good actress, she didn't need to show up.
Ooh,
I thought
ouch,
that was hilarious. I know, it was a little bit of an ouch, but at the same time, the show had dragged on quite a bit at that point, so it was kind of nice to have something just to cut it up.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the hits and misses with the show. First of all, it was sort of waiting on tenterhooks to see if it was going to get off on time because they had a football game right before it, so they did kind of make it. They were a few minutes late. Neil Patrick Harris, who everybody loves as a host, how did he do you think, last night? What's your take on it?
I felt like we didn't get that Neil Patrick Harris charm that we've had in the past. And I feel like, because he's really good about bringing in his writers and setting the tone for the show. And I feel like when he hosts the Tonys, they kind of give him carte blanche and he does whatever he wants. I felt like here, there was someone backstage saying, nope, we can't say that. Nope, we're going to do this. Nope, we got to do this. And I felt like he didn't have that same freedom that he does to write the show like he usually does for Tonys.
Yes, it wasn't as carefree. It wasn't as crisp. It didn't move as fluid. It wasn't as good. They did have that number in the middle of the show, which was sort of funny. The dancers, like, I've lived with that. I mean, eventually, as you drag on, they start with the bits, and at the end, by the time Will Ferrell came out in the shorts, I get the comedy of it, but it's like, just get on with it already. You know, by then, you just want to wrap things up. But he was listed as a producer of the show, but yes, I guess there were probably more constraints on what he could and couldn't do. The opening bit was sort of funny with the other Emmy hosts coming up, and then, of course, Kevin Spacey in the audience with that ominous, you know, half
I thought
court
Kevin
side.
Spacey was the best part. Yeah, I thought he was the best part of that bit, just character from House of Cards, which is hilarious. And then immediately following that, which I think even upstaged the opening, was Amy Poehler and Tina Fey doing their little bit, and I thought that was hysterical.
That was funny. Yeah, so they sort of, bookended that longer thing with the host coming out and doing their thing. So it was okay. It was a little uneven. The In Memoriam thing, which I think they're going to reevaluate for next year, probably didn't go over too well when they had the... Was that a groan? When they had the people come out and talk to them. Yeah. That probably was kind of a letdown and just kind of dragged it out. I guess their intentions were okay, except, first of all, it dragged the show down. It also offended some people because before it happened and they announced the different people that were going to be singled out, other people were complaining, how come you didn't do one for Jack Klugman? How come you didn't do one for Larry Hagman? I mean, there were, you know, so that whole thing. So it becomes a competition of who deserves more recognition than the other. And then it just kind of has a Debbie Downer added, you know, approach to it. So they may not do that again.
The In Memoriam segments are always controversial. We talk about them at the Oscars because sometimes people get left out and things happen.
Yeah, they leave people out.
But then by singling people out instead of just the big package that they normally do, which they did, but they did something in addition to it. And I think it was hard because you've Cory Monteith, who died of a drug overdose, and I understand that they wanted to represent the generation, but you also are looking at Jack Klugman and Larry Hagman, who made tremendous contributions to the television landscape, and it was easy for people to get offended. And I actually felt the segments, other than the one to James Gandolfini, fell a little bit flat, honestly. They just, they were like, okay, here we go. And, you know, there were no clips or anything like that. It was just the person talking about the deceased. And I just didn't think it worked, and they'll probably never do it again. And it was very focused on death because we did the tribute to JFK. We did the tribute to Liberace. And it was hilarious when Steve Levitan from Modern Family said, these might be the saddest Emmy, but we couldn't be happier.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. At first, I wasn't sure what you're talking about, and then I said, oh, yeah, so that death that's hanging over this, it's so true. I did like I was heartfelt. Edie Falco's tribute to James Gandolfini was heartfelt. But, yes, they were all just very, sort of hung there. I thought Jane Lynch did the best she could, but it was kind of awkward because, yes, it was a tragic death. He died so young, Cory Monteith, and it was an overdose. And, she tried to talk about the good and the bad, and I get that, but still... maybe not the time, the place for that. So I'm with you. I don't think they're doing that one again. That's just my guess.
Nope.
and it just sort of drags it down, too. Also, they play the music. I know they want to keep the show moving, but they spend so much time with the banter and the bits, and then when people make their speeches, they're already rolling them off the stage. It's like, well, that's what you're there for. So cut some of the other stuff out.
Were you a little bit offended by that? I mean, I just felt like they were speeding people off so quickly, and people were doing some funny things this year. I mean, I understand that, Merritt Weaver did the really short bit, but Julie Louis-Dreyfus was hilarious up there with Tony Hale, and they basically did it in character, which was great. But
yeah,
rushing
was fun,
people
yeah.
off in order to get to a Carrie Underwood segment, come on.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Which made no sense. I mean, why do we need Carrie Underwood? Yeah, exactly. It just was... Yeah, I don't get that. But they do that at all the shows, it seems. They're like rushing people off. They always tell them they only have a certain amount of time to talk, and I understand that to some extent. You don't want them to talk forever. But at the same time, I'd rather see them cut out a bit than cut out the person who wants to make a speech. Let them talk. This is their moment. Plus, you had a couple of short ones like Merritt Weaver. You must have gained a couple of minutes on that one, for somebody else. So let somebody else
I
ask.
I would think so.
Yeah. So,
it does seem the producers had some ideas. They didn't execute them well. And the Emmys isn't a show that normally runs long, unlike the Oscars. The Oscars usually have at least a 30-minute buffer to make the show longer, but it's not. The Emmys is not an international audience the way the Oscars are, so that's the big difference. They really want to keep it a tight 3-hour show, and we don't need as many bits in the Emmys that we might have with the Oscars.
But, you know, it is TV, and it's a TV show about TV, so you think they would do a better job. That's my whole thing with the Emmys. It should be, you know, the Tonys is usually the best award show, followed sometimes by the Grammys, because they have all those cross-generational, of course, genre performances. But you think the Emmys would stand out because it's a show celebrating TV on TV, so it should be better than it is.
And the logic says, but yeah, there is no logic sometimes with award shows, because people get so excited about ideas and what to do and how to change it and make it exciting. But you know what, the Tonys has not changed their format in years, and you know what, they've proven that it does really well just exactly as is.
Exactly. So what about, were there any other big surprises for you that you thought were just, Breaking Bad won for best drama. I kind of thought House of Cards might have it, but I understand why Breaking Bad won as the final swan song show. Any other big surprises for you?
I'm just trying to think in some of the categories. I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus was definitely, you know, everyone predicted that she was going to win. The Bryan Cranston loss, I think, was probably the biggest shock of the night for everyone because of the summer we've had with Breaking Bad. It's become even such a hot topic on Twitter on Sunday nights. It was really hard to imagine that. But I think Bobby Cannavale winning for Boardwalk Empire was kind of a surprise. I think a lot of people thought it was going to Aaron Paul, also from Breaking Bad. And you remember, he only did a few episodes, and a lot of people felt that he should have been nominated in the guest star category. So that was kind of interesting that he wound up winning the supporting actor category. He didn't expect to win either, but he's been doing some really great work, not only on Broadway, but if anyone hasn't seen Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine, he's excellent in that film. Yeah.
Bobby Cannavale is great. He's a great actor. If you see him on Broadway, I saw him in both The Big Knife and The Mother with the Hat. He's got the chops. I mean, he carried that show. There was a lot of he really showcased what good acting is on that show versus what bad acting is with some of the other people. But we won't go into that. But he's a very good actor. But you're right. I guess there was some controversy. But is he going to be back? He's a recurring character, though, is he not on Boardwalk Empire now?
He's a recurring character. And I think, you know, I mean, his work is outstanding. I don't think it was controversial in like, oh my gosh, he shouldn't have won. I just think it was one of those things that people expected a Breaking Bad sweep, I think, in the main categories in terms of best actor, supporting actor, best drama. But really, it was Anna Gunn that came away with the best supporting actress win for that show.
Well, it's interesting because she hadn't won previously, but both Cranston and Paul had won. They were like perennials for a couple of seasons, so maybe this is like spreading it around a little bit, which I guess sometimes the award shows like to do, and that's... also interesting. Although I don't know how that can be. You know, it's not a conspiracy. You don't really know. It's not a concerted effort. It's just how the votes come out, I guess. But it's interesting. Also interesting to note that Bob Newhart finally won an Emmy for guest starring in The Big Bang Theory. But it's, you know, this is a, talk about a TV icon. Two really iconic shows. Never won an Emmy before. He's 80-something years old. He wins an Emmy, and he wins it in the special night they have for the Emmys that aren't televised.
Emmys. They are actually televised now by FX, but they're put on like a random day after the show has happened and everything else. They were on Saturday, and they happened last week. But I think it is shocking that Bob Newhart had never won an Emmy. It's just one of those things going, how did that happen? It's like Steve Carell never won for The Office. There are always those categories of people you go, how did the voters never get this right? And I wish he had played a little bit bigger part in the show because he is such an icon. And, you know, our time with him is limited, honestly. You know, he is in his 80s. And I just think it would have been a nicer tribute to have him a little bit more part of the show.
Yeah. Well, he was on. He made it a couple. He showed up a little bit in the behind the scenes with whoever that guy is that did the behind the scenes break. And
Shamar Moore, which was very awkward, I have to admit. He was not.
I was going to say.
Isn't easy. And, I mean, you know, Neil Patrick Harris had a hard night hosting, and he's a great host. And it just proves that when they try and take an actor and put them backstage and think that they can just interview people, I mean, he almost looks scared of Bob Newhart, who is so tiny next to him. He just seems really intimidated by it.
He seemed a little odd. I guess that's what, he was just awkward and he felt uncomfortable because all of his breaks, whoever he was talking to, I was like, is he drunk? What's going on with this guy? He's just not. He looked good. He's handsome, but it just sounded very awkward and not that great. But then he also presented with Jim Parsons, who won for Big Bang Theory. I guess that was, some people predicted that one. I guess other people thought who was going to win in that category, in the best comedy.
Jim Parsons, from everything I'd read and everyone I talked to, basically he was going to run away with that category. And he's won before, but his work is pretty outstanding.
So I think the comedy category, because I think a lot of people had Julia Louis-Dreyfus winning also. So those two were the only ones that maybe if you had a bet going were predicted. A lot of these were just, you really didn't see them coming, which is kind of fun, actually. I think it's kind of fun to see that spreading around and seeing different people get chosen. So let's talk a little bit about the gowns, if you want to do a little minute of your Joan Rivers. What what were the highs and lows for you?
Yeah, you know, kind of an interesting night because the last few years I feel like the Emmy Awards have really stepped up in terms of fashion, almost rivaling the Oscars, not quite. But I felt like last night there were a lot more misses than there were hits, or maybe just some dresses that you're like, that's pretty, but it really doesn't, you know, have that wow factor or anything like that. You don't have those moments where you're like, that's amazing when they walk down the red carpet. And, you know, you take a look at some of the dresses, and you see the people that maybe don't work with a stylist or really aren't into fashion. And you look at, like, Lena Dunham. You know, she was in Prada, which is an amazing label. But then you see the outfit, and she's got the tops all over her, and the dress is ill-fitting. It looks like they didn't take it to a tailor to make sure it fit her properly, and maybe not the right color for her. And I think, you know, she's a cute girl, and there's definitely ways to make her look amazing on the red carpet, and I think she's probably just picking out her dress herself, and that's kind of what happens.
Well, you can't do that. You have to have somebody helping you. Please don't do that. It's not good. Yeah, that was not a good-looking dress. And there are a lot of people who have really good figures who, unfortunately, they didn't look great in the dresses. I can't think of who it was now, who had a horrible dress. I should have written it down. You know, a lot of them have good figures, but they just, bad prints. Some of the prints just did not translate. Maybe they look better in person, and on TV they don't translate well. That's a possibility, I guess. You know.
That happens a lot, actually, and you see this at the Oscars, where dresses sometimes look great on the red carpet, they look terrible on TV, because sometimes the color doesn't photograph right, or vice versa. It looks great on TV, and in person, you're like, that's a hot mess. But you really want to take a dress that looks great on both, you know, in person and on TV, and it's important for, if a person's hiring a stylist, that stylist actually takes photographs and takes video ahead of time to see what's happening, and make sure you also don't have those wardrobe malfunctions where the dress is sheer and you can see through and things like that, because it does happen.
There were a couple of those, too, right?
I didn't realize that the black was sheer, you know, and all of a sudden you see a nipple, and
most people don't want their nipple showing
on Oscar night.
Yeah, exactly. But don't most of these people have stylists? I mean, you think it's not just look in the mirror, lady. It's you have people around you who tell you, you know, they pick it out for you and help fit it and all that. You're saying you don't think so.
At the Oscars, I would say about 95% of the people have stylists. But in TV, for some reason, I guess people don't think that they're big enough stars. A lot of them don't work with stylists, which is really kind of shocking. January Jones is someone that has never worked with a stylist. She's someone that likes to pick out her own clothes, and she takes risks, and she's more of a fashionista. Blake Lively never works with a stylist. She always looks stunning, but she's really into fashion. Tina Fey just started working with a stylist a few years ago. Amy Poehler, a lot of the funny ladies, a lot of the comedians just take a dress off the rack kind of thing and do it. And then as they get more and more famous, they realize, oh, I've been on the worst dress list too many years. I need to hire somebody. And then they start,
well,
you all of a
nice.
Sudden notice a change.
Tina had a nice dress. That was a good color, I think, for her, too. That blue translates well on TV. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I think, looked good. People were raving about Claire Danes, and I thought it was kind of a bland. I didn't think it was that great looking to me. I don't know.
It was a little. The dress I thought was beautiful. I thought it was too much of a wash with her hair color and skin tone.
Yeah.
But the other thing was the fit. She's so thin. I mean, and she looked thinner than I've ever seen her. And I thought, you know, things needed to be nipped and tucked a little bit in terms of the darts of the dresses. And she needed to eat a cheeseburger, honestly. And here's the thing. Like, you know, you look at this, and if people are looking thin on TV, TV does add weight to you. It can add anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds.
Yeah.
So think how thin she looked in real life. That's not good.
Yeah, she must be emaciated. Yeah. Well, it's like Matt Lauer. He must be a real stick. He's like a stick on TV. He must be a very thin man in person. All right, let's Let's switch gears to the fall TV season, which officially launches tonight, I think, in most networks. I guess a couple of shows started a little earlier, but a couple of biggies. You know, I'm always hesitant to, I think we had you on before, shows that I like. Every year at least one show gets canceled that I like, so I don't want to get hooked on a show if I think it's going to hit the chopping block, so tell me what to avoid. Tonight I know they're opening up, The Voice is back on NBC, we know that, but also they have The Blacklist with James Spader. Heard mixed things about this. It kind of looks like a ripoff of, I love James Spader, but it looks a little bit like a Silence of the Lambs type thing with Hannibal Lecter's relationship with, it's not Hannibal Lecter, but it's this guy who only wants to have a relationship with one FBI agent. What do you know about that show?
You know, it's one of those things that I've heard a lot of good things about it. It has the possibilities. I know that the pilot was a little bit uneven, but I heard that the subsequent episodes, it definitely gets a bit of its rhythm. And I always think if you're going to try a new show, try four episodes, because usually by the fourth episode, it should have its rhythm and get on its feet. If by the fourth episode, it's a hot mess, that's the time to take it off of your DVR. But James Spader is known to do excellent work, and I think it definitely has some legs this season. Although I always think about this, you know, last year everyone was talking about the new normal, and that, you know, tanked about mid-season and just never came back. So we don't see it this season. So you just never know. But I think The Blacklist is definitely one to check out.
And that goes head-to-head with Hostages on CBS, which I guess is like a limited series. It's 15 episodes. They may continue it, I guess, if it's popular enough. This sounds intriguing, too. It's Dylan McDermott. Stars as a rogue FBI agent, I guess. He's an FBI agent, but he takes his family hostage and tries to have this Toni Collette, who is the woman in the house who's also a surgeon, bump off the President of the United States in the opening episode. So that's a little intrigue. What do you know about that show?
Yeah, you know, Toni Collette usually gets me into any show, honestly, because it's one of those things that she's such an excellent actress, no matter whether she's in TV or whether she's in film. And I think that the intrigue is kind of interesting with everything that's sort of been happening this weekend in Nairobi. It's kind of an odd time, and it premieres tonight, so the timing's a little bit like, I don't know if that'll scare some people off, just given what's been happening over there with their mall situation and hostages and everything else. But I definitely think that it's something worth checking out, especially if you're into sort of that type of suspense, thriller, intrigue, that will also draw in some, I would say, timely storylines into it. You know, sometimes things we see in real life will probably sort of make its way into the storyline, and I think that that's something that usually leads to smart writing. We see it with Homeland. We've seen it, you know, a lot of with the SVU type of shows. So I think it'll have some legs.
If they keep it. The problem with those kind of shows is that if you get immersed in it and then they drop you midway, like if they decide it's not going well and it's not popular and they just cut you off, which sometimes happens. Remember last year on ABC's 666, Park Avenue or whatever it was, they hyped that so much, got into it, and all of a sudden it was going on hiatus, never came back.
Never came back. If you hear that the networks are putting something on hiatus in the middle of a brand new season, it's most likely not coming back. They may burn off a couple episodes that they have in the summer season, but that's usually the kiss of death. And the one thing that's frustrating, I think, for a lot of TV viewers is that the networks have so much at stake in terms of advertising and everything else. They are less apt to give a show a chance the way cable networks are, or the way we see Netflix releasing shows, because their structure is much, much different. Cable does, you know, 13 episodes, where the networks are doing 23, sometimes 26, depending on the size of the show. So I find myself watching less and less network television and more cable.
Yeah, exactly.
And with some of the internet shows that are coming out.
Exactly. But maybe the networks need to catch up with that and realize, A, people watch differently than we used to watch. It's not just watching it when they're putting it on. People have DVRs, people watch it on demand, all of that. But also, maybe they should have smaller seasons to start with. You know, do a 12-week thing or a 10-week thing and see how it goes, rather than, you know, commit to all these shows and then they wind up in the can. Maybe they get on DVD and people can get them if they're really hardcore fans later, who knows. But it's annoying. It's frustrating if you fall in love with the show.
Yeah, and it's a good point, because a lot of us are doing the binge viewing. I spent all last weekend, which I can't believe I haven't even watched the show, but I haven't watched The Good Wife, and I watched all of season one of The Good Wife while I was homesick on the couch. You know, but it's just one of those things that you can get it on Amazon Prime or you can get it on Netflix, and viewership is changing. The younger generation has grown up with computers their entire life, they barely watch TV. They watch it on their laptop or, you know, on their tablets and things like that. So networks are going to have to adjust accordingly. So we're going to see some major changes in the next 5 years.
We hope so. There's a lot of sitcoms coming out, too. I know the Goldbergs, that looks, talking about going back in time to the 80s, looks like it could be funny or not, depending. Well, all the sitcoms, it's always like, if they look funny, it's like it could go either way. It's like the Robin Williams crazy ones. We talked about that, I think, the last time you were on. That one looks like it could either be funny or not. We'll see how it goes. But what are you hearing about? What's the sitcom to watch this season?
The big one, it seems to be Michael J. Fox Show. And that's where NBC has put a lot of their muscle behind Michael J. Fox's return to television. And he is including the Parkinson storyline into the sitcom. It's not going to be the main focus, but it is going to be something that sort of creeps into the storyline every so often, and he plays a TV reporter that is dealing with the illness. It's one of those things that, again, I don't know, is Parkinson's funny? Is he making fun of it? And I know that Michael J. Fox has addressed that, and he's like, it's part of my circumstances. So he's like, there will be certain situations where it is funny, but he's like, I'm not making fun of the disease. He's been very sensitive about that.
Well, we'll have to see. I think it's all going to come down to the writing, because we know he's funny. But if it's just going to be one Parkinson's joke after another, that may fall flat. But if they can weave it into the story and there are other things going on that's funny, it may work out well. The Sean Hayes show looks kind of funny, too. That, I think, comes on after his. Is that Sean Saves the World?
I've heard real mixed things on this one, which disappoints me, because I think Sean Hayes is hilarious. And hopefully that's one of those shows that, you know, needs 3 or 4 episodes to get its groove, and then it finds it. But the pilot episode has been real mixed. Controversial show is Dads, which is a Seth MacFarlane show with Seth Green and Giovanni Ribisi. And it's, you know what, it's Seth MacFarlane humor. It's crude. I think it'll probably do well because Seth brings his own audience to the table. But, you know, you're not dealing with a happy-go-lucky stereotypical sitcom when it comes to that one.
And they also have Mom or Moms on CBS with Allison Janney, right? That's opening tonight, I think.
Yeah, it is, and, you know, it's so interesting just to see Allison Janney, because she sort of moves so freely between television and film. I think she's one of the most underrated actresses, like, out there, because she's so good in everything that she does. I don't know if this show will have legs, though. It's one of those, it's going to be Moms versus Dads, and it's going to be who's going to survive this
we'll
television
happens.
Season.
And what do you know about the Millers with Margot Martindale?
Oh, the Millers. Yeah, you know, Will Arnett is in that. Last night I was laughing because I'm like, someone sprayed him with a long shade of spray tan. He looks a little orange. I don't know if anyone else saw that, but, you know, you've got Will Arnett, you've got Bo Bridges, Margot Martindale, as you just said. You know, you've got some really funny people in this, and I think this one has the potential to stand out in the sitcoms. We've got a lot of sitcoms on the plate this season, so it's going
to
see who the strong side is. But I like Will Arnett. I mean, I usually, when he hits big.
We'll see. And I like Margot, and as you said, Beau Bridges, too. So you really, if the writing is good in this one, it could be a winner. It's funny because I don't think we've ever seen Margot Martindale and John Goodman together in the same movie or TV show, and they're both ubiquitous. They're always popping up in movies, but not together. So it'll be interesting to see.
They
the
should. I know. Someone should think about that and find a vehicle for the two of them to pop in together.
I think, before we let you go, I think we may have a caller who may want to talk to you, so I don't want you to go in case. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's Bob.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing great, guys. Hey, listen, I wanted to get your thoughts on Here Comes Saul, the spinoff from Breaking Bad.
Spinoff
from Breaking Bad.
Okay, Chris, what do you know about that?
Yeah, I mean, that was announced, I think it was like last week or so, and I think for Breaking Bad fans, this is going to be such a huge thing because it's a way to continue the story and keep the momentum going, and becomes its own sort of franchise. Because if you remember back in the 70s and 80s, there was always those spinoff shows. I mean, Mork and Mindy was a spinoff of Happy Days, which is kind of hard to even imagine. But I love that.
But Happy Days was a spinoff from Love Boat, by the way. You know that, right?
But the Love Boat?
Yes, it was a Love Boat, not the Love Boat, I'm sorry, Love American Style. Love American Style.
Love American Style. I was like, the Love Boat, really?
Yeah.
I was like, how did that?
Yeah, it was a segment called Love and the Happy Day.
Yeah. But I think that this is great because, you know, cable networks have been breaking ground over the last decade or so. You know, HBO sort of led the way with that. And I think that AMC is really noting that, you know, Breaking Bad has resonated with audiences. It's become even a place, like, on Twitter to discuss it. That's what the water cooler is these days. But I think that this is, you know, it's going to be called Better Call Saul, and it's been in the works for months. They were doing the negotiations forever, but it's definitely going to happen, and he's one of the most recognizable supporting characters from that show, and I think it's sort of a great evolution not only of the character but of the storyline and the legacy of Breaking Bad.
And Bunkhouse Bob doesn't like you.
Who?
Bunkhouse Bob doesn't like you.
Bunkhouse Bob?
You know the show Bunkhouse Bob and the boys from Company C? It's a gay show. I love it.
Okay.
Huh?
Thanks for calling, Bob. Are you done?
Yeah,
we lost,
like,
Bob. I guess.
I was like, did we just get Baba Booey'd? Like Howard Stern?
I guess so. Yeah, it must have been. I don't know. It's, you know, it's unfortunate when you're not privy to what the joke is about. It's kind of not as funny as, I guess, it is to them.
I know.
Them,
I
but,
like,
okay. Okay. Well, whatever. It's okay. We can play along. Anyway. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Well, maybe if the Breaking Bad sequel takes off, maybe that we can see a Peggy Olson sequel or something after Mad Men is over. Do you see that as a possibility?
I would love that. You know, I'm a big fan of Mad Men, and I think that there are so many storylines and so many characters you could take that entire legacy. And, I mean, you've got so many strong female characters, and it would be interesting because we've seen this whole story evolve through Don Draper, through the men's eyes. It'd be interesting to see what happens because you're moving into the 70s of what happens with
exactly.
The women.
Exactly.
So it was
that
a very interesting era. I would love that.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I would think that'd be great. And, of course, what do you feel about this breaking up? They're going to do like a Breaking Bad setup with dividing the 14 episodes into 7 and 7 for 2014 and then 2015. I have mixed feelings about it. One thing, I'm in a way, I'm happy because I love the show so much I don't want to let it go. On the other hand, 7 episodes, you kind of feel like I'm just getting into it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things. It's frustrating because you get the momentum and then all of a sudden it's done. And I understand from AMC's perspective, you know, financially it makes a lot of sense to them because they can sell huge advertising dollars for this. But B, it worked well with Breaking Bad, and it. What's happening with them is they're losing two big iconic series on their network. They're losing Breaking Bad on September 29th, but instead of losing Mad Men next year, they have to wait a whole other year, 2015. It gives them some time to build up some more shows in their coffers there. It's smart.
Right. No, it is smart as far as that goes. Well, we'll see what happens. I hope I don't get hooked on a show that's going to get canceled. That's all I can say. I'm like you. I'm on the fence with some of these network shows because I don't want to commit myself and my time, but there are some interesting ones. And as always, Kristen Burt, a pleasure to have you here. You know a lot, and I know you're busy on the day after the award show and probably tired, so go get some rest. And people can find you on Twitter at Kristen Burt. It's Kristen Burt, of course, the correspondent for iVillage and After Buzz TV. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
I can't watch this.
It is at the end of the Arkawi Show. Just call 347-857-4505.
I can't watch this.
Or hit me up on Twitter.
My TV makes me so bored, makes me say, oh my lord, what is this garbage here? Wanna cover my eyes and flood my ears. This sucks, and that's no lie. It's about as much fun as watching paint dry. Lowers my IQ one notch, and that's the reason why I can't watch. I told you, homeboy, I can't watch this. Yeah, nothing but trash, and you know I can't watch this.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. I'm in Georgia nut, mounds don't. I'm in Georgia real milk chocolate, coconut and munchy nuts too. Mounds got deep dark chocolate and chewy coconut. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Peter Paul, I'm in Georgia nut, Peter Paul, mounds don't.
Because
sometimes you feel like a nut.
Chocolate nuts is that heavenly coffee, heavenly coffee. Chocolate nuts is that heavenly coffee.
Welcome back. It is the Emmy Beth Arkowitz Show, 347-857-4505, our post-Emmy fall TV preview show. If you have anything to say about what happened last night or what's coming up in the upcoming season, give us a holler. Mawa Mama will be here in a couple of moments as well to dish her view of the Emmy. Hey there, welcome to the show.
Hi there. I just wanted to know, what did you think about Diane Carroll with her remark about Lloyd Nolan? I didn't think that was too nice.
Oh, what did she say about Lloyd? Oh, she said, because she was saying how great-looking the guys are now, and they weren't that, her co-star was Lloyd Nolan. Yes, I remember that.
Right, I thought that was a kind of a little snotty remark.
Well, Lloyd Nolan was never known as a hunk, though, was he, even back then?
No, I don't think he was, but I don't know why it was necessary for her to even say it that way.
I guess it was snarky, Diane, but she looked elegant, though. I'll give her
that
much.
Yeah, she looked very nice. She had one of the better gowns on. It was, I don't know which actress it was, but there was some woman that had a hideous gown on that was dark green with, like, roses, big roses all over the place.
Yeah, I can't remember who that was now, but yes, I remember that gown. Yeah, it was luscious.
It was really not, it was not good looking, and there were quite a few gowns that were not fitting right on the people that wore them. It's too bad. But it was a great show, and I really enjoyed hearing Kristen Burt and her take on everything, and yours as well, of the Emmy Awards last night.
Okay. Well, are you looking forward to any special shows this season?
I'd really like to see Hostages and The Millers.
Yeah, I'm curious about The Millers, too. It looks like a great cast. I hope the writing holds up, because, I'm a big Margo
so
Martindale
too.
Fan.
And I'm with you.
Right,
I hope that they don't cancel something that I get into.
It usually happens, but I'm hoping not.
Right.
Appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, let's see. What are you looking forward to? On the Twitter feed, somebody said, yeah, the show was lousy last night. I can't believe you're actually even talking about it. Okay, well we are, so thanks for the comment. Hey, welcome to the show. Is this Mawa Mama?
It certainly is, and I'm laughing at that Twitter comment because I'm kind of thinking the same thing. Although I didn't make that comment on Twitter. It was
Get
a long
line.
Show,
yeah.
and my DVR cut off, like, the last part because it went over.
Oh, yeah, well, it went over because we had football. I had a feeling
yeah.
that
yeah.
Well, it went over. It went over anyway, I guess, but they ran a little late because of football, and then it went over, yeah. Okay, so Mawa Mama, my sister Shauna, who sometimes pops on for our Coffee Clatch editions with her take
right.
on pop culture and the view from
I'm like
Jersey.
A black cat. I just keep coming up, yeah. Or a bad penny. What's that expression? I just keep showing up. Yeah.
That's a bad penny, I think. Black cat.
Yeah, I think it's a bad penny. Black cat, right?
But speaking of bad penny, that's in the Jersey Housewives, so that's another story.
we can get to that, too, yes.
We'll get to that later. So on the Emmy Awards, so what were your highs and lows in a nutshell?
I like the tributes. I always do, because I think it's nice when they can have those heartfelt moments. Not just to celebrate, things that have happened, but these artists that, we've lost. And I thought that the tribute to James Gandolfini was beautiful from his wife, Carmella. Carmella. It was just, she was crying, and it was, not his real wife, the actress.
Edie Falco.
But it was, yes, Edie Falco. But she just did a beautiful job. Speaking about him and, as an artist and as a wonderful man. And that was nice. I think it's nice when they take time to do that. And then they also did one for Corey Monteith, which was nice. So, those are those quiet moments. I like that. I know that they did some shtick.
I think you're the only one that liked those. We were talking about that earlier. I think that went over like a lead balloon, all those tributes, frankly. It just was a big downer, and I don't think they're going to do them again, just so you know.
Okay. they weren't very long, though, and then I thought, even though I don't think it was necessary because it did go long, I heard you speaking with Kristen about this, I did think the number that was in the middle of the show was funny. that they had
funny.
The song and dance thing in the middle of the show that
yeah.
was kind of, just very funny.
Yes, it was a little cheeky. It was funny, but then when they had the dancers, they sort of dragged it out, and they had that choreography thing, too, also, which I thought was...
Yes. Although I thought it was interesting, I don't think it was necessary, but it was interesting to see some of that, artistry on the show,
yeah.
that they challenged
yeah.
them, to do these things, but...
they don't usually like have it, yeah.
They don't usually have it. It's like, it was almost like it was a show trying to be a different award show. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just, it almost seemed like they were trying to be, you know, the Tonys or some other award show rather than the Emmys. I don't know. But, and also, like, they did that, you know, thing with Carrie Underwood singing, you know, singing that song. Like, didn't she do that at the Oscars, too?
She did something. I don't know if it was the same song, but she did.
No, it wasn't the same song, but it was that same formula. You stand there, sing a sweet song in a big dress. I know at the, I think at the Oscars, her dress actually lit up, and they had different effects on her dress. But it was also like, is this the new formula for award show tributes? You know, get Carrie Underwood to be in a huge ball gown and sing a heartfelt song. I don't know. It just seemed like I'd seen this before already. Like, that's the only thing.
You may
thing
be right on that, now that you're saying it. So what? So now that we're talking gowns, what were your take? I know you're always loving to, you know, shout your inner Joan Rivers.
Well, I know you talked about that a little bit, but first of all, Heidi Klum, she's this beautiful creature, but no one should wear a sequined turtleneck. I just thought that looked really weird and uncomfortable. It was such a high neck. I mean, I know it had cutouts and everything, but it just looked strange. She looked like, you know, one of those women from some tribe that wears, like, those weird neck braces or something. I mean, it just looked way too high, and I mean, I guess she must have, like, the neck of a giraffe because it was the biggest turtleneck I'd ever seen. I wasn't going for that. I thought Allison Janney looked beautiful in her violet dress. That was a beautiful dress. Who else?
Who was that
other caller that was talking about the green dress with the flowers on it, that was Lena Dunham.
No. There was another one. Lena Dunham was the one that had, she had like a red splotchy stuff. There was another person who had, I can't think of who it was, and I remember seeing it. It was a longer gown. Lena Dunham's was sort of a shorter thing. That was hideous, too. We talked about that, Lena Dunham. I can't think of who it was, and she had a good figure. A lot of these people have great figures.
Oh, was that Connie Britton's dress? She was wearing sort of a teely green long dress, strapless. It had things on it.
That's it, Connie Britton from Friday Night Lights and also now Nashville. Very attractive woman, good figure, not a good dress.
Right. Right. It had a lot going on. Maybe in person it was a pretty dress. Maybe it doesn't televise well, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the issues that we were discussing, that maybe some things look good in person and it's a real miss on camera, but there should be a way for these stylists to certainly know what works and what doesn't work, because these people supposedly, if they have a stylist, should know what translates on the screen, because they've been doing this long enough.
I agree. Well, Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad, she had a pretty dress on. It was this white and black dress, but she looked too thin. Talk about, I know your guest mentioned this too, that, you know, some of these women are so thin. And remember, imagine what they look like in person because the camera adds weight to them. This woman looked so bony in her dress that I thought, oh, my goodness, I can't imagine what she looks like in real life because she already looked like she was walking out of concentration camp. And I could snap her like a twig. That's kind of scary. It takes away the beauty. I mean, I understand, you know, they like to be thin, and I understand, and I would like to be thinner than I am, too. But it just, I don't know. Like, you're wearing a strapless dress, and all I see are clavicle bones, and it's just, and vertebrae. It's a little scary.
Yeah, and they always have to wear it strapless, so you see all the bones bulging out.
They're just so bony. It's like, ooh. There were a couple that were extremely skinny.
You wonder if their legs are strong enough to hold them, you know, if they're walking across the stage. But,
agree.
Yeah, I went on the show in general. I think went on a bit too long. Are there any shows that you're looking forward to seeing that you know about in the upcoming season?
Well, I think, like, you mentioned a couple of them. I'm looking forward to seeing The Millers because it's got a good cast, so I want to see what that's all about. I'm hoping Mom with Allison Janney and Anna Faris works just because I love those two actresses, and I think Allison Janney looks fabulous. I'm interested in Hostages and Betrayal, which
Betrayal,
is on
ABC. That looks very good.
On ABC, that looks interesting. And
if they start that and they cancel that, I'm going to be disappointed if I like it, because that's the kind of show
right.
that looks like you
get sucked in and then no closure.
Yeah.
I know. And the Goldbergs, I'm going to watch it because it just looks so kitschy, and it's about the 80s, which
way,
I love that era. It could go either way. It could be, but it's supposed to be based on a real family, is what I heard.
That's what I heard.
This guy who's writing it.
The guy taped all his family's, the guy who wrote it or created it, taped all his family's antics, I guess, in the 80s, so yeah.
Right, and that, this is the inspiration of it, and that's kind of funny that it's actually, this craziness is based on a real family.
Yeah. Right.
So I'm going to give that a shot, but there's some old ones coming back that I'm looking forward to seeing. You know, like Two Broke Girls, which I just love as a comedy.
Yeah, I
never got
into that one, but okay. I'll give it a shot. I never really...
it's a little raunchy humor, but it's just, for 30 minutes, it just makes me laugh, and, sometimes you just need that at the end of a week, kind of thing.
Sure. And The Good Wife is coming back this Sunday.
The Good Wife, yes.
So
is it on regular...
Will she or won't she? That's the question. Will she or won't she? Or who's she going with, Will or Peter,
Yeah, so which camp are you? Will or Peter? You're not commenting on that?
Probably Peter, but I fluctuate. I'm mostly in
Yeah,
the,
I find
I'm
I do too. Like,
annoyed with her
for
already.
A long time I was really Camp Will, and then I started, thinking Peter was really trying hard and that he would be, it would be better for her to, stay with him and not pursue Will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. But I think they've got to do something this season because it's too much of this stop and start and will she or won't she, who should, enough already. It can't be moonlighting for the rest of the, tenure of the show unless they're going to just end the show now. I don't know. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. We'll see. What are the shows that are you looking forward to coming back?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Oh, what I'm looking forward to coming back. I don't know. What do
when
I usually have on my DVR?
That's right.
When I find out, I'll let you know.
That's right. You always DVR them, and then you, because I said, did you see it yet? Did you see it yet? And you're like, no, I haven't gotten to it. It's on the DVR. Now, what about, let's talk reality. I understand Joyzy, which I only saw a smattering of last night, and you know that I have sworn off the reality shows, and yet somehow I find myself still watching some of them. But that's another
story. Well, I fell asleep watching it, so you can tell right away that it was not, I don't think, that interesting an episode. But
I'm happy to report my biggest news on this is that it was the penultimate episode. Next week is the finale, so I'm happy it's finally
over.
It felt like it went on forever this season.
We say that every, past couple of seasons we've been saying that. It just seems to go on too long.
It's the same. Well, I think because when they started the show initially, it was only a handful of episodes, and then every year they add more and more because I guess it's a popular franchise of this Real Housewives.
Right.
And they just milk it for all it's worth. And to me, unless you're a real diehard and you love every nook and cranny of this show and you want to, keep seeing the same thing over and over again, that's what they do. They repeat the same feuds and the same pattern and the same formula, and they go on trips and, it's a different locale,
right.
But it's the same basic thing of them, arguing and then making up.
And the same petty argument about the same thing, really.
Yeah.
Never gets resolved. That's what it seems. Like, let's move on.
Yeah, well, the whole thing is Teresa out to get her sister-in-law, Melissa, and badmouth her to the rest of New Jersey. I'm surprised you haven't encountered any of these people in your own life. But
well, because what I think it is they're only important within their own circle, and it's a bigger state than they think.
Right, exactly. No, you're right, but it's just so funny that everybody seems in their little enclave of it. Everybody seems to know, and you get these new people that pop up every season who are the new messengers, if you will, or the new conduits that somebody, the weapon that Teresa's using against Melissa is some new person, random person that she kind of knows who then she disavows and says she doesn't know her, and how could she come up with this information? But then you're saying, well, how did she come up with it? Is she a random woman that just popped up that got the information? A random crackpot that weaved her way into the group? I mean, it just seems strange. So it's, but yet we are talking about it, and a lot of people love that show. They still watch it despite the pettiness and the repetitiveness of it, and despite the legal woes that are hovering over the Giudicis. May or may not go to a federal prison.
I don't know. They're just
spent Emmy night
unclassy people.
Orange is the New Black. Yeah. That's what she needs to be doing, binge-watching Orange is the New Black and Cell Block H.
Yes, to get prepared. I do remember. I remember, you know, watching it together. Couldn't wait.
We used to watch it. But, you know, it's such a kitsch classic. People should know, if you want to see Cell Block H, if you're hooked on Orange is the New Black, which I know is the big trendy show to watch, haven't seen it yet, but I did read the book a long time ago.
Me
I'm
too.
One of the first people to read it and review it. Cell Block H is the one to watch because it's the kitsch Australian, I guess it was an Australian soap opera about women in prison back like in the 70s, I guess, or whenever it was first made, and we got it.
Right.
70s or 80s.
When did we watch it? Like 80s, I guess?
80s, I guess.
I don't know.
But it's on YouTube.
We didn't see
it on YouTube. We didn't see
it. You said you had seen some earlier episodes when the characters were much younger. And
yes. Well, I saw it.
We didn't know it was on that long, I guess.
Yes, I don't have time. I didn't have time to watch the whole thing, but I saw the first episode. I believe it they listed it as the first episode or an intro or something, and I saw part of it. I just saw the intro of it, and the characters looked much younger, like they were just starting, and the intro was different about how they – I don't even remember what the – it was so long ago that we watched it as kids. I don't remember the how the intro went, but it was just different. They came off – they were showing them, like, committing their crimes and how they got to jail, I guess, or whatever, and that was But, yeah, they looked much younger, so I guess it ran for a lot of years in Australia. I don't know. How many years it ran here, or how many seasons they acquired here. But,
I don't even know how we got hooked on it. But we did, and we
either.
Couldn't wait every night to watch, you know, every week,
it
I guess.
It was on like 11, 11:30 at night on some, yeah, I don't know. You know how kids get, somehow we got hooked on it. We thought it was interesting and funny, and it was very kitsch. It is,
yeah.
Still. So I would recommend that to Teresa if she's, you know.
I agree. Let's give her a little experience prior to her incarceration.
Her impending incarceration. Well, they're going to try to drag it out, and we'll see if they feature it, I guess, on their, you know, on the new season. I guess that's a big thing up for grabs, if they're going to have the new season, which I'm sure they're going to have. But what are they going to feature, what they can say and what they can't say? And, of course, the infamous reunion is coming up soon, so we'll see. They take that apparently.
I think if they can't feature it, they should just, you know, cut her out.
Get rid of her.
Because that's, like, the only interesting thing about her storyline now. To me, because it's so repetitive, and it's sort of been there, done that with her and her personality.
Exactly.
We've already, you know, been exposed to her enough seasons that, you know, whether you love her or hate her, we already know everything about her. We know her buttons. We know what sets her off. We can almost say what she's going to say because she has sort of a limited vocabulary and, you know, expressions. And I don't know. It's just like sort of like when they got rid of Danielle. It was like there was nothing else they could do with her. I think they've gotten to that point with Teresa, too.
I'm
sure Teresa wouldn't say that, but I just think
Teresa
that,
doesn't feel that way, but I
no,
agree.
Of course, but she's trying to build her empire. But I think, you know, to me, she's
empire.
Empire.
Well, Andy Cohen, take heed, because, yes, and I think Bravo, and we've talked about this with legal experts, Bravo might be in some trouble, what they can air and what they should be airing, so maybe they should just play off it, and maybe it might make sense for them not to, but, you know,
just
they're
to
not
be
known
safe,
for their taste, because Bravo was very that controversial move a couple of seasons ago when they ran the episode, or the season of Beverly Hills right after that. One of the husbands on that show committed suicide, and they ran with it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very controversial because the premiere was set to air like very shortly after the tragedy, and they still went with it. They didn't delay it. They didn't do anything else, and they just weaved it into the show. And you know, to me, that was sort of a very grubby ratings grab move on their part, frankly. And I think if they're going to play off Teresa and Joe's legal woes in the same way. First of all, it's a little trickier to deal with because they can't really know, they're not going to be able to film a lot of things probably because of the court procedures and everything. They certainly can't film court procedures. Federal courts, you don't have any cameras in there. But I just think it's just sort of a grubby ratings grab, and maybe they should just sever their ties and move on, but I don't think they will because I don't think they're about class.
They're very exploitive. I mean, obviously, the whole type of reality programming they do is exploitive, which is part of the reason we watch it.
it's got that kind
of, you know,
voyeuristic. Yeah.
You know, it's that rubbernecking quality to it. You know, but but I just, you know, and we've talked about this before, that these reality stars, quote unquote, that demand, you know, a lot of money and become very divish. I don't know, if I was Andy Cohen, I'd be like, you know, I've got a list of people sending me, you know, videotapes and auditions and dying to be on, you know, one of these shows. I'm not going to you know, negotiate with you. That would be it. You don't want to do it
right.
at this price? This is what we're giving everybody? You're not any more valuable. I know
well,
they get fan base, but people are very fickle, as you as
yeah,
I think
you
said,
you know,
ADHD, whatever,
they,
you know.
Yeah, well, I always said it's cultural ADHD, but they had they played hardball with the New York City Housewives, which I guess that show at some point is going back. I don't know. Apparently, some of the cast members were trying to hold out for more money, and they pretty much said, no, this is whatever the flat fee was they were offering them.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to sign on or forget it, and I think most of them did. Maybe there were a couple that hadn't. I don't know what the latest is on that. But for some reason, New Jersey, I guess, because it is, I think, the most popular or one of the most popular of that franchise, they hold them hostage. Maybe they feel they can't hold them hostage. But I agree with you that no matter how popular Teresa may be, and she is, she will tell you the breakout star of that show. And I think she is. I think she has the most followers. I think for some reason people like her. She did have a best-selling cookbook and a few others that didn't do as well, but whatever. She does have a fan base. I think there's no question about it. But you're right. People are fickle. People do tend to move on to the next thing. And, you know, Danielle was popular, too, when she was on that show. Jill Zarin was popular when she was on The New York Housewives. Bethany Frankel, they all
right,
came and went.
Right.
And the show survived.
Right, exactly. And were replaced by other people. So,
exactly.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not on New York. But I just think, like, they're not unique. They don't have a unique talent
yeah.
that
exactly.
warrants that kind of negotiation. You know,
no,
move on to somebody else. And the public will get over it and either, you know, give their allegiance to the new person or find something else, you know.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
always
well, the
risk
like you
when
said,
there's a
the
change.
Storyline, I think with New Jersey, the storyline has run its course. Unless they're going to focus on the legal troubles, what they need to do is get rid of, you know, let Joe and Teresa go, and then I could see Melissa being the next one. Because remember when Danielle was on, Danielle was the villain. Now then
uh-huh.
Teresa became the villain. Teresa,
right.
I mean, Melissa is poised to be the next villain because she's got her own little thing going, and she's got obviously
yeah.
friends who are willing to turn on her at a dime to get on TV. So they'll
yep.
bring in a couple of new people like that, and you could see new sparks and a new whole set of issues with her. That
mm-hmm.
would be pretty much
Definitely.
The same but different. You know, it's the same kind of thing, but it's a different story because it's new people and a little new issues. Because the same old thing between the sisters-in-law, I think it's tired already. It has run its course.
It's very
and
tired.
They're not going to resolve it. They're certainly not going to
I mean, how much
it on
therapy?
TV.
I mean, they've tried different therapists. They did the retreats.
Yeah.
They've done two retreats. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
They've said they're sorry multiple times. And it
yeah.
just repeats itself. And it's like, okay, I've seen it already. I'm done. Let's
And it doesn't work on
Like
TV.
You said, let's bring on new characters.
Therapy Kids does not work on TV. I'm all for therapy. Go to a therapist, but don't do it on TV. It didn't help Bethany Frankel's marriage either.
Oh, I agree with you.
A lot of these shows, the marriages go by the wayside because it's just not the place to work out your issues. And if you're having issues to begin with and then you try to work them out on you know, truncated therapy sessions on television and then the show gets aired 6 months later, you're replaying
mm-hmm.
it all with the
You're rehashing something that you probably have already worked out.
Exactly. And the blogosphere is a little Greek chorus adding their two cents into it and evaluating
yep.
it and watching everything. And you don't need that. So if you really – and that's why a lot of these shows, people wind up getting divorced. They're, you know, if they're fragile to begin with, I'm not saying it causes divorce, but if they're already on the fault line and it's already shaky, this is not going to help you. It's not going to save your marriage.
I agree.
Definitely. And the therapists get involved in this, I think there's a little – I don't know. I don't want to go quite as far as saying it's unethical, but I just don't know that it's the best. It's not very productive.
Well,
it's
not very
professional.
What? It's not very professional.
Yeah, it's not very professional. I mean, I don't know that it falls under completely unethical guidelines because they're willing to do it and all of that, but I just don't think it really it helps. And I think you want to be more cautious and just say, that, you know, you want to do this, and maybe it would help them, and maybe it would help Teresa and Joe and Melissa to go into therapy together, but it would take a lot longer than a session with some woman who's going to drop the F-bomb at a hotel in the Catskills,
yeah.
wherever they were. Anyways, but you know, you ladies are talking about this for people who are not interested in the show. We're talking about it a lot.
I know. We always end up doing that. I know.
We
but
get,
it's
we
hard.
Get hooked on it.
You
I
get
mean,
hooked
it really
on
is.
It, and, it's, and
yes,
they do show it a lot.
Believe me, Missy, when you're born to be a sissy. Without
See? We only had a brain. We were talking about something else. I'm shifting gears here. That was a very jarring shift, Trudy. You put it on too soon. Wizard of Oz. Did I mention that
I was going to say, what's going on?
Wizard of Oz is celebrating its 75th anniversary, and they're having this they're showing it in IMAX in some theaters for a limited time. What is your take on Wizard of Oz? See, I have an interesting thing about Wizard of Oz. I don't know if you know this or not, but I had one ex-boyfriend who hated Wizard of Oz and was actually afraid of the Munchkins, and I thought
really?
Because he was short. Yeah. And then I had my ex-fiance who loved The Wizard of Oz and thought it was the best movie ever made. So my litmus test for relationships are, if you have, what do you think about Wizard of Oz? Because to me, I'm indifferent to The Wizard of Oz. Although I did have a Wizard of Oz poster in college. I just like the poster. But the movie, I could take or leave. So what's your Wizard of Oz barometer?
Me? You're asking me or just the general audience?
Well, in general, but now you're here, so what do you mean?
Since I'm here, I get to answer. Well, you know, as a child, I loved Judy Garland and everything Judy Garland. You would think I was a gay man, but I really just loved Judy Garland. So because of that, I loved The Wizard of Oz, you know. And I would go around the house, singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and, you know, I probably wanted to be, you know, in The Wizard of Oz. So I like the movie. Now, as an adult, I really don't watch it. I know it's on, like, once a year, but...
No, you're wrong now. It used to be on once a year. It used to be on the springtime. Now they have ratcheted it up. It's on like every other minute. They put it on.
Is it really?
Thanksgiving. They put it on. They make it a Thanksgiving, a Christmas movie now, and a spring movie. So you see it a lot more.
That's weird.
It used to be like, you see Wizard of Oz in the spring, and It's a Wonderful Life at Christmas. Now Wizard of Oz is on
right.
a lot. On
and
cable.
Sound of Music is always on like around Thanksgiving.
Oh, really? I thought that was Easter. But anyway.
Oh, maybe it
Wizard
is.
Of Oz is Wizard of Oz is on a little too much, I think. And I try to avoid it because it's on so much, but I'm kind of indifferent to it. I mean, I don't remember loving it or hating it. I remember seeing it as a kid. It was like an annual thing to do because it was only on once a year.
Right.
But I never remember feeling that strongly about it. But now because I had two relationships go south people had very distinct opposite relationships. The relations went in the same direction, but they had opposite feelings about the movie. I kind of like people who are kind of in the middle and have no real relationship to The Wizard of Oz.
No relationship to The Wizard of Oz, please.
No commitment to it one way or the other, and that makes it a good movie. But anyway, I was going to mention this on Friday. We forgot to mention it, but that was the big 75th anniversary, and I guess they're showing it in IMAX. I can't go see it. Can you see it in IMAX? I can't even imagine that. But
no. Yeah, very big,
really,
very large.
Really, really up close and personal with those munchkins.
Yeah, and those flying monkeys, too. That's the part I remember being really scary, is the flying monkeys.
Yeah, they were scary parts in that movie for little kids. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
But that's where we're at. So, Mawa Mama, always a pleasure. We'll see what happens in the coming season. I hope we don't get hooked on a show that gets canceled. That's the bottom line here.
I agree. You know, it's worse with a drama than a comedy, because comedy, you might miss it, but it's, you know, they're usually one-off little episodes. But a drama, when they put it on hiatus or whatever, there's no closure. It's much tougher.
Exactly. They leave you hanging. And I know you're still bitter over the whole Smash cancellation.
Oh, don't even get me started on that.
Don't even get you started on that, because we don't have time for that. But
exactly.
I do appreciate you stopping by. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure.
Okay, honey. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. That's my sister, Shauna, also known as Mawa Mama, her secret double probation reality show starting soon or later. It doesn't really matter. Right? All right, that one fell flat, too. It's all right. Okay, hey, listen, we're going to wrap things up. Please follow the show at the Blog Talk site. It's the Amy Beth Arkowee Show. We'll check in on Friday with our Inspiration to Action Challengers. I hope you're writing down what inspires you, what brings you sheer joy, and what you're grateful for every day. Also, your goals. We're going to talk about action plans next week. On Friday, we're also going to be talking with Bart J. Gilbertson. He is a mystery writer. Debut novel is out called Deathbed and Breakfast. He will join us, and we'll talk about creativity and chaos. Is order or chaos more conducive to creativity? You know the answer to that, I think, but we'll talk about some studies that came out, and we'll also celebrate autumn with a few songs. That's all coming your way on Friday. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at AB Writes. Hop over to the website at amybetharkowee.com if you have any show suggestions. If you have a story to tell, yeah, we're always looking for authors and filmmakers, musicians, theater impresarios, and media mavens who like to dish TV, movies, hot topics in the news, and all of that good stuff. So thank you, Trudy. Thank you, Aurora. And thank you, ML from TCS headquarters, Kristen Burt from iVillage, Mawa Mama, callers, Twitter, tweets. Thank you all for joining us. See you Friday. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. We'll catch you on the Amy Beth Arkowee Show. Say goodbye.
have it, boys. Case closed.
Orange and yellow and purple and green, the lights of the city at night set me free. Stumble through the bars on forget-me-not lane, sparkle through the glitter but don't show the pain. Come to the party, the drinks are on.